Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski. I'm tired now.
Hello. Welcome to the end of time.
Welcome to the end of the year.
It is the end of the
year.
Next
week, time begins again.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
That's how the thing do. We got some stuff that we're going to talk about. Newsy items.
You heard it here first, folks.
News.
Stuff.
On a news podcast, we're going to talk about the
stuff
news.
And things.
Things and stuff.
Trailers. Jordan Peele dropped a trailer on Christmas.
He sure did.
Creepy-ass Christmas present under the tree.
It was, but remember, The Exorcist came out the day after Christmas. What was
yeah.
it, 30 years ago?
I'm
or
not trying to.
Remember that, Danny.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think you would know that fact.
there's if you look up, there's a whole thing about The Exorcist that people are complimenting me on, a video we did that I didn't write, but I'm going to pretend that I did.
There you go.
Just take all that credit. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some stuff that's going to happen with the X-Men and Fantastic Four and Deadpool maybe in going into 2019. And also, I wrote here BM, which stands for Black Mirror. Could mean a lot of things.
Wow.
But first, we do this thing at the top of the show where we personally talk about things that we specifically are geeking out about. Adam.
Yes.
What is it for thee?
Well, I'm geeking out about the fact that we are quite possibly now in an alternate timeline / dimension after the events of last evening.
Okay, do you want to? You should elaborate.
Yeah, I don't know.
Specifically in New York.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's seen the headlines that are on CNN and such, but we had quite the event last night in New York City. A transformer at a Con Ed power plant in Queens.
Bumblebee.
Exploded. Exactly. Yes. And I don't know if it was Bumblebee or Optimus Prime, but one of them exploded and there was Energon all over everything. By which I mean to say the sky lit up intensely blue for a few minutes. And those of us who were out and about at that particular time or within eyesight of that thing, it was really freaky. Because you didn't know if the aliens were coming. There was no sound, you know. I mean, we were far enough away. There is a sound when Transformers arc, but we were far enough away that we couldn't hear it. But for a moment, your mind is just, having never seen anything like this before, your mind is just running through the possibilities of what it could be. And the first thing on everyone's mind was aliens.
What was really, really funny was, well, not so funny. I did know some people who lived close to it, and there was definitely an explosion.
Yeah.
It definitely hurt. But the funniest thing was the NYPD response on social media, where they actually tweeted out, in addition to what you just said, which was that it was a transformer that blew, but they actually said in the tweet, we have no evidence of extraterrestrial activity, like with a straight face.
But,
so I feel like this is the second time this year that people just sort of acknowledged that, yeah, it could happen, but that wasn't it.
But that's what they said in
Men
in Black, too.
They're acknowledging it. You don't mean they're trying to hide the truth?
Or,
well, like that needle in the sky that everybody knows is an alien ship. But
they didn't say anything about an extra-dimensional event.
They didn't say anything about a wormhole.
Yeah, so really, we don't know, honestly.
No.
We just know there was a very bright blue light in the sky. And I choose, like, you know, we were last night when we came home, my friends and I were all like, oh, well, at least we're not dead. And I said, maybe we are dead and the afterlife is just really cool because you just hang out with your friends and it's just like normal life. So that's also a possibility. I don't know. Maybe someone reset the timeline because we went into the worst timeline a couple years back and now maybe something needed to be done to I don't know. But whatever it was, I hope that it's this dimension still has, you know, good food.
Okay.
And the same, I hope this dimension is not the one with the lizard people.
I'm just mad. I'm just so mad as hell. You know, that happened.
And he's not going to take it anymore.
I missed it. I was in Manhattan at the time. And what's worse is that a year ago, I lived a block away from where that went down. So if there were superpowers to gain.
Right. That's the other thing I'm hoping for.
It could have happened to me. And
but you weren't there. So we're happy so that you weren't out. There. So you didn't get hurt. And you weren't sucked into another dimension.
But the superpowers thing, really that was actually another thing.
So you're upset you're still here?
No, it is entirely possible that all of us in Queens now have superpowers, they just haven't manifested yet. That's the other thing I'm
hoping
for.
But I was in Manhattan, so I ain't getting
Yeah, so Danny
shit.
Loses.
I was in Brooklyn, and aliens don't abduct black people. Just doesn't happen, so I'm safe.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
long last, some good news for the black community. yikes.
Don't take us. No, I'm kidding. Actually, I think one of the first earliest recorded quote-unquote abductions was actually a black woman and a white man, and they weren't taken seriously because they were a mixed couple, and it was like the 50s or something. So.
And also because their claim is outlandish.
Right.
No one gets abducted.
Right.
But anyway, so we should move on. But that was just a really trippy, crazy event that happened last night and had us all wondering what sort of apocalypse we were facing. It could have also been Godzilla. You know, Godzilla has blue atomic breath.
Taking out Mothra in another dimension.
You know, but we don't know. We may never know.
Yeah, I was watching Clueless the musical, so I missed out. Oh, well. Karima.
I actually spent Christmas Eve watching two horror movies, which makes absolutely no sense, I know, because if anybody who's listened to this podcast knows that I am a scaredy cat, but I watched Bird Box, and I could tell that Bird Box was really going to be more of a thriller and not like, you know, because I don't like gore porn. That's like, I can't stand that. So, but I was entertained. I actually wasn't going to watch it, but with social media got me to watch this movie because there were so many insane memes going around about like basically spoiling it without context. So I was like, I need to see what the heck is happening. So for all intents and purposes, and I'm not going to spoil it right now, but it's basically about some type of entity that invades where, and if you see it, your eyes basically turn a different color and you are suddenly uncontrollably have this urge to kill yourself in various different ways. So it's strange ways too. It just very quickly turns into like a suicidal final destination. Sandra Bullock and two children, slight spoiler, one of which is not biologically hers, but these two children end up having to travel blindfolded. And basically the whole movie is told basically flashing back and forth between their traveling and how they got to be in the situation they're in. All kinds of people were in this cast. John Malkovich was basically my voice in most of it.
He was at the height of, there is a fly in my soup.
Yes.
John Malkovich.
Yes.
That's his thing. And he was peak.
Yes.
Fly soup situation.
Absolutely. It was like that character dropped into like a horror movie. It was, I thought it was executed really well. Was it tropey? Here's the thing. I feel like it was physically executed by the director very well. Was it written really well? I don't know because I don't watch a ton of horror movies. Was I scared? Yes. Was I sitting on my phone so that I wouldn't look up the ending? Yes, because I didn't know if I was going to make it. After they took out one of the characters, I was kind of like, well, I'm done. But I've heard all of these theories, and I think this is the thing that fascinated me about it. Social media got me to watch the movie, and then after I watched it, I went right back to social media to discuss it because so many people on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and stuff had all of these theories as to what exactly the metaphor for the entire movie was. So I found it fascinating. The only other thing I will say is the girl that plays her daughter should win a damn award because that little girl was really good. And for a child that age to, I think, be able to express herself that way. And I commented that, made that comment to my boyfriend who said, oh, you know what other little girl is great? The little girl in Train to Busan. Let's watch that. So a couple of spiked eggnogs in, yep. I watched that movie right after I watched Bird Box, and then spent the first half of Christmas Day rethinking my life choices. Basically, every time my cat freaked out about something, I was like afraid. I would like close my eyes. I was frightened. So, but it was interesting. I get. I was entertained. It was fun. I don't think Bird Box would have gotten the reception it got, and gotten just the gone viral like it did if it wasn't Christmas Eve. I think if it just came out on like any other Friday in any other month, I don't think it would have gotten the attention it got. Kind of like Bumblebee. I think it's an amazing movie, but because it came out in the middle of all these other movies, like, it's not getting the attention it deserves.
So. Well, they also didn't market that well, but that's a whole
other...
I don't think they did either.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story. Bird Box.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a Denny.
It's a dumb, bad movie, and I hated it.
But what did you geek out about this week?
What did I geek out about this week? So many things, but I'll tell you what. I got a copy of a movie that's getting re-released next month early, and that movie... It's 1995's Waterworld. And I watched, there, so it's three discs. It's an Arrow release. They've got the theatrical cut. They got the TV cut, which is almost 3 hours. And then there's the, quote, Ulysses cut, which is basically a full 3 hours with weird janky effects that they didn't finish in it and some stuff that they only showed in Europe. And gosh, it's still not a good movie. But here's what I came away with. I was watching it, and I thought, okay, so this movie came out in 1995.
I saw it in the theater.
What did you think of it when you saw it in theaters?
I enjoyed it very much.
Interesting. You should rewatch it then. You should really watch that Ulysses cut. I would be kind of curious what you would think about that with all the juice in. But I thought it came out in 1995, so it was a Kevin Costner movie. If it had come out in 2005, that would have been a Russell Crowe movie. And if that had come out in 2015, it would have been a Tom Hardy movie. And I would have watched the hell out of that movie. I don't think I would be into the Russell Crowe edition, but definitely a Tom Hardy version I would be very into. But I said that, and then somebody tweeted today, I learned that Aquaman was not a remake of Waterworld. I'm just saying that they're putting out this Waterworld. They should have put it out now. It's a shame that it's coming out next month. I don't know if people are still going to be talking about Aquaman that much, but... Yeah, if you liked Aquaman, check out Waterworld, a real Kevin Costner classic. That's got a lot.
It's got a lot more to do with
the story behind Waterworld is more interesting than the movie itself.
Yes,
I think Waterworld is better than Aquaman.
What?
No. I can see why Adam would say that. Yeah. No, based on what he said.
Yeah, I can see why you would say.
No, based on what he said last week about Aquaman. Yeah, I could totally see that. But I have heard the same thing. The fact that it was one of the most expensive movies ever made. So was The Abyss. Things with water are expensive.
Did you know that Joss Whedon worked on that? He came in to do some script doctoring.
Yeah.
And I think he referred to it as 7 weeks of hell or something. He was on set for a while. He was involved. There are some scenes that knowing that you can say, oh, that's the what happens when a frog gets struck by lightning or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a couple of those real quality Joss Whedon lines. Anyway, yeah, I rewatched it. I have not seen it, and I couldn't even tell you how long. But yeah, I have to say, it is definitely worthy of a rewatch / first watch because it is this really infamous film that they tried to make money in every way that they could. They really thought it was going to be a success. It was called the mean joke was they called it Fishtar instead of Ishtar.
I see what you did there.
No, that's it wasn't even my joke. But they made board games. There was a Virtual Boy game of Waterworld.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was really fun doing a deep dive. There was a get it. Yikes.
Wow.
Anyway, now I've ruined everything. Let's talk about the news.
Sure.
So a trailer dropped. And it was for this movie called Us, a little film that no one has been thinking of or cares about at all, by this nobody guy, Jordan Peele or whatever.
Jason!
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me and I'll keep you safe.
Jordan Peele obviously put out Get Out, considered now to be a modern horror classic. people have been quietly waiting for the follow up. What's he going to do next? And then a little while ago, they put out, you know, like an image, a poster, and then the trailer dropped on Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Here's a murder trailer.
Yeah. I didn't watch it until yesterday.
What did you think of it?
It's scary. It's freaky.
What's the caramel? What's the pitch? So what is it about so far that we could tell?
It's basically the theme of this one, the theme of the last one was teaspoons. No, the theme of this one is basically being afraid of yourself. So this family is basically haunted and chased by their doppelgangers. I mean, basically, who appear to be trying to kill them.
What are you people?
It's us.
They look exactly like us. They think like us.
Winston Duke, Lupita Nyong'o.
Lupita Nyong'o, yeah.
Got their kids. They're on holiday. They're down by the beach or the shore, if you're from Jersey. Offered from A Handmaid's Tale is there. That's how you know something's going to go sideways. But it's not her immediately. First, it's themselves. Mm-hmm. That's your worst enemy.
And, or is it?
Or is it? Or are they actually the good ones and somebody else is bad?
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. When the trailer dropped, everybody was losing their minds because they were like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. First of all, 5 on 8 was the main theme song from like the 90s.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I don't remember who sang that song, but I do know that I spent part of my childhood bopping around to that. And they've ruined that song for me now.
That would be because Loonies.
There we go. Loonies.
Loonies.
Now I remember.
Loonies.
Now I remember. So
Loons.
So
got it.
But basically, after hearing the song play in the car, and first of all, shout out to whoever edited this trailer because they did an amazing job freaking us all out. There were strains of the chorus that were played really like in a really, I don't know, what is that, Adam? Like in thirds and a minor chord or something throughout the whole thing?
I mean, that's a classic trailer move, but I'll tell you, you never know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, you know, as great as Haunting on Hill House was, or Haunting of Hill House, when they dropped the trailer, it was a slowed down, creepy version of Our House is a very, very fine. And that did not really work for me. But 5 on 8 worked really well. That was a good slow down, creepy trailer situation.
The movie could be 2 hours of Lupita Nyong'o looking terrified at something off camera. And I think that would be scary enough for me. Just every shot of her looking totally freaked out freaks me out.
Oh, and I like the reverse. I like the when she was playing the other version of herself.
I have two theories.
Okay.
Because I've watched this trailer like a ton of times and I was like feeling like, and it means nothing because it's a trailer. They're just showing you bits and pieces. I have two theories. One is because there's several things that happened in the car and I had other people agree with me. Lupita snapping off beat to the music and her daughter, when she goes to sleep, doesn't put a bonnet on her head. And I know that sounds crazy, but those are two small things. And Jordan is all about the small things. I think Lupita's character has already been switched. When she's in the car, that's one of the things. A part of the family's already been switched. They've already been invaded. And then my other theory is that we're obviously dealing with two different dimensions. We don't know how we would look to each other in another dimension. If your mind cannot comprehend how you appear in another dimension, then you could look scary and crazy and creepy and all these things. Because the in several of the scenes with the children, their doppelgangers don't hurt each other. Something has happened on the other side to make them want to come here. Like the little boy's face is burned. The doppelganger little boy.
Or so you think. See, that was the one I thought because he's the first one to spy them in the trailer.
But
he's a little
think,
boy. So I thought the boy got burned somewhere off screen and then they swapped him out. So that the little boy that's burned is the original, is the one from the main universe. That's my
got it. And
that was my guess.
But I also think the boy might be on the spectrum
too. From another dimension, another dimension.
How'd it get burned?
Another dimension.
How'd it get burned? How'd it get burned?
But and then here's
a good reference.
And then, like you said,
nice joke.
Like you said in the beginning, maybe the family that we're seeing in the car, they're the doppelgangers.
Oh yeah, you don't.
The greatest monster is man.
Yeah, and then
got him.
But because Jordan Peele likes to play on tropes, like just the concept of fear itself, being afraid of yourself. What's your worst fear? Maybe the only thing that I feel like I can confirm is that, because a lot of people were like, wait, but what about the white woman? And does she die? And is this about race? And he was in an interview already this week and said, what I will tell you is this is not a movie about race. This is just a straight up horror movie. I need to know more about this white rabbit though. And the scissors freak me out because there's straight up sewing scissors that my mother used to have, made by Ginger that looked exactly like those. And I can I'm freaked out because I can never touch the scissors again when I visit my mom.
So I may never see this film.
Oh yeah.
Oh, because it's too scary.
I'm just not a horror movie fan. So
I wasn't either. And then I watched Train to Busan and I'm okay.
Oh wow. That was the thing that corrected it.
I don't know if that's it.
I will enjoy very much someday reading the Wikipedia entry about this film.
Wikipedia.
So that I can understand its entire plot.
Entry.
Get out. I made it through. But that's that was more psychological.
But I think that's what this is gonna be.
This looks a little more horror.
Well,
scary,
I mean, so
slasher,
here's what else. Well, I mean,
in the dark type of thing.
So
rabbits.
Jordan Peele said to Lupita Nyong'o, "Hey, watch these movies." And the movies were The Shining, The Babadook, It Follows, which really tracks.
Yeah.
A Tale of Two Sisters, The Birds, Funny Games, Martyrs.
I don't know Martyrs.
Let the Right One In and The Sixth Sense. Now, here's the thing.
What's Martyrs? I don't
Martyrs
know.
Martyrs is is probably the most well known of the new French extremism movement.
Okay.
So it's Eli Roth and them cats and
them.
All that torture porn and that
cats.
Kind of stuff. It's kind of like that. Like
Wait, help
that,
me out. Is torture porn Saw?
Yeah, yes. I guess Saw has also got that, but Martyrs is a little more thoughtful. You know, it's really sort of, I mean, it's analyzing the nature of existence through extreme, you know, like body destruction. Knowing that was on the list, I thought, that seems a little dicey. I don't know. Martyrs is a tough watch. I have doubts that Jordan Peele is going to go full Martyrs, but who knows? She sure put it on the list. It Follows is definitely the thing that jumped. And then, the kid had a Jaws t-shirt. There was definitely, they keep referring to it as a new nightmare. There's Wes Craven's new nightmare. Yeah. So, you know, maybe there'll be some dream stuff going on. All kinds of possibilities. But here's what I do know. Winston Duke giving everybody dad feels. He's got that dad sensibility.
Indeed.
He's a zaddy.
What is that?
it's a word.
Okay. Nope. I need you to explain to Adam what a zaddy is.
I mean it's just like an attractive dad.
Adam is going to Urban Dictionary as we speak.
Right. You went to do Urban Dictionary. Read the Urban Dictionary definition of zaddy.
It actually does not have anything to do with fatherhood.
I mean.
Oh, when you want. Okay. Well. We can't say that on this program. So let's not talk about it.
Okay. Anyway, so So that's us. And now, how
us.
About you? Yeah. No, let's talk about Kevin Feige and also all manner of other things that have happened with the X-Men and other sundries.
Well, nothing has happened.
Well,
yet.
But it has and it hasn't. So the deal is Kevin Feige was on a podcast and he was all X-Men 2019. We thinking about it. That, you know, I mean, that's a direct quote. That's exactly what he said. It isn't, but you know, basically the gist is they've got plans. They're going to start. Looks like once they're out from underneath all the Avengers Endgame stuff, they're really thinking about X-Men and Fantastic Four and, you know, how they're going to deal with Deadpool and all that stuff. But it's looking good. It's there. He's very optimistic.
Good, because I don't know about Dark Phoenix.
Well, I don't think anybody does. And here's the thing.
I need to know why Storm was standing under an umbrella. I don't. I can't. That trailer, that's the only question I had. Like, why?
I mean, that's the question that everybody has about the X-Men franchise at this point. Why?
Why?
I think that's a near universal vibe off of that. But, yeah, it's kind of weird, right? Because the movie's still got to come out. Got your Dark Phoenix. You got your New Mutants. Supposed to still happen. And yet, here's this man saying, 2019, working on it. So what are they going to?
Do you think they'll not have them come out? They won't cancel them. Like that's...
I don't. I genuinely. All bets are off. Here's what I do know. Remember all those Netflix Marvel shows? Gone. I mean, they made these movies. Yeah. So I don't. I mean, if there's some stuff that got filmed on the Netflix end that just never comes out, then anything is possible. But I mean, I don't know. I really don't know at this point what is going to happen with those two movies. X-Men Dark Phoenix. I think that's probably going to come out. I really don't know if we're ever going to get that New Mutants movie. I think there's a real possibility that that's just going to stay on the shelf for all time or go direct to DVD or whatever, or put it on streaming. They might do that. That I could see.
And I mean, do they do a hard reboot when Marvel starts putting out X-Men movies? Do they recast entirely and get rid of some of the casting that people have actually liked to do that? It's a really confusing
I think they'll start over. I mean, look at how recently they started over with Spider-Man and got away with it. So they already know they can do it. They know it'll be fine. And you know, the people that that seem to be universally liked from the last run of the X-Men stuff have done it for a couple movies now. You know, your James McAvoy, he's been doing it. He's been on it since First Class, so he's gotten his fill. He's done plenty of movies. Do they really need to do another James McAvoy Professor X movie? I don't think. I think he's probably good.
He's probably satisfied.
Yeah, I think he's all done.
The only thing they could do at this point is a Magneto Charles love story. That's all that's left.
Yeah, but everybody's bored of that now because they keep like pitching up to do it, and then they just it's just angst. It's just an angst fest, and I don't think anybody cares anymore. So if they can get two new actors and just dive right into them being.
They could do like a Professor X origin story.
Yeah, but they should. The conversation as guided by, but then certainly continued by many others, as guided by Clarkesia Kent, is that they should just go right on ahead and start with Storm. Just don't waste any time. I don't think that's going to happen because I've met movie people before, and that's not how this game is played. But
actually, I have a question for Adam. Seeing what you've seen of Legion, would you want Legion to have a movie, or do you think it's best kept where it is?
I think it should be a TV show, unless you do a completely different Legion where it's like this is the Legion from the movies and this is the Legion from the TV show. I don't think you need to make a movie out of everything. I think
because Legion is one of the characters, one of the X-Men that I felt has been treated better in that show than he was ever treated in the comics.
I mean, what they could do is end up with the model what we're seeing now with the Disney Plus stuff, shows that we already know are coming for Loki and Scarlet Witch and all these different things, where you could have that with individual X-Men. I mean, X-Men is the perfect shell for that because you've got all these different characters who all you could tell compelling little 8-episode stories for any of them and then bring them together into an X-Men movie. That's the perfect fit for that model. So
they could, and they've and they already this week confirmed that thing about Loki, which is that he was never really in control of his own actions. He was never a bad guy. Did you know that? Isn't that annoying?
But here's the thing, though. That you can do that with Loki, though, because Loki's had so many iterations, because Loki is, even in the comics, has been so many, because they are an entity. I feel like they could do a lot with Loki. I don't know about the whole Vision Wanda thing, though.
I don't know what's
going to
happen.
Like, if they do a Vision Wanda sitcom, maybe I'll take that.
They absolutely should do that. That is the best
idea. Like, Vision take it out the trash.
But, so I don't know. I mean, whatever problems the X-Men series has had, there are parts of it that are iconic, and it's just weird to me to think of someone else playing Charles Xavier, someone else playing Magneto, someone else playing Wolverine.
I'm ready. I am so ready for them to just kick the whole thing to the curb and start over. It's so past due for me. Yeah. And listen, and I want more than anything a Storm movie. That has been the thing I've been jonesing for a long time. So I would love for that to happen. I do too.
I just think Jordan Peele should do it. It should be a horror movie.
Whoa. I mean, my belief is that should be something.
Maybe that's the secret plot of Us.
Oh, well, that's a Storm movie.
Lupita Nyong'o is Storm.
Whoa. Yeah. Wait, though. Not us. Just the fact that Lupita Nyong'o is Storm. That's
she's
amazing.
She's too old.
Well, she is. She could play the older.
X-Men are technically like teenagers or young 20 somethings.
But when she's running the school. She is older.
True, but if you're going to start with a Storm story, I would assume they're going to start from the beginning of Storm's story.
I still want them to do that, you know. My strongest belief is that they need to do a Logan-type story, to do like a version of Storm's life-death. Yeah. That's what I want. Storm, you bring in Forge, that's what I want. That's the story that I want. That's the one. That's the one I've been jonesing for from the start.
No, but honestly, that would be an interesting story if it started there. If the story started with her and Forge.
Oh, like
and
she towards the end of her life, and then you got the...
No, and then she realizes what happens to her, what he did, by the end of the movie, she gets all her powers back, and she's amazing. That's the first movie.
That'd be pretty cool. I would take it.
You're right. Lupita still might be too old for that one, but...
Look, there's a lot of things. We can't talk about it too much because it's all...
speculative.
What could it be? How about this? How about Black Mirror? They put out an episode, a movie length, Choose Your Own Adventure or Booze Your Own Adventure, if that's how you want to do it, episode called Bandersnatch.
You heard it here first.
Bandersnatch.
It's an adventure game
based on the book.
Jerome F. Davies was a genius.
See that bloke who went cuckoo and cut his wife's head off?
When it's a concert piece, a bit of madness is what you need.
Yeah, it was Bandersnatch. I mean, I literally was late to this podcast because I was watching all the endings. Honestly, when I got up this morning and started playing it, the first thing Netflix told me to do, because I started on my phone, I felt like there was one of those computers. I started on my phone, then I switched over to my laptop, then I'm like eating breakfast, going over to the TV, like all my streaming devices played this thing. So, and then my boyfriend was watching on PS4 downstairs. What it is a movie that's an actual RPG.
It's a guy who read a book who's making a game in the 80s. So the book is Choose Your Own Adventure. He's adapting it into a video game that's Choose Your Own Adventure. And now you're watching the Netflix version wherein you're controlling him in a Netflix Choose Your Own Adventure.
But it's a type of video game that Adam likes. It's a type of video game
No,
I'm just saying, we've talked about this before when you were saying you don't like a lot of the newer video games because... You know, it's that classic 80s, even when you play it, you have to do some work to basically get the items that you need to finish the game. So even in that, and then you feel that even as he's building it and all the probabilities and stuff like that. I'm sorry, my inner geek girl went nuts over this thing. And I literally, it's funny, the very first choices I made kind of ended the movie almost immediately, and so it started over almost immediately. Huh. And I chose it wasn't the cereal, it was when he took the job right away.
Oh yeah, I did that too.
So then when I had it start over, all the things that were happening I was fascinated by, but not in like, I don't know, it wasn't a total RPG, but I just liked the fact that the choices that were made. And then when I got to the parts where, when I watched it a few times and purposely started changing some things around to see what would happen, I ended up in this wacko scenario where it was like a Kill Bill fight scene between.
Oh, that's like the best part of the whole thing.
It was awesome.
Here's what I'll say about it. So the most interesting thing about this episode is that they have cracked the case on how to make it so that you have to pay 100% attention to the thing,
and you
you're
have
watching.
To watch it over and over again.
Because this is the thing that sort of slipped me up. Because you know, I, in addition to doing this podcast, I also do a weekly write up, and I usually wait until the end of the week. I'll wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do it because I never know if something overnight's going to happen on a Thursday. It's going to be a really important thing. And so I am trying to watch this and do my write-up, and I'm missing, I didn't see that I was supposed to be making a choice, and then it made the choice that I didn't watch, and I was like, God damn it. So you have to, you have got to watch it.
I didn't do that. So basically, if you don't make a choice, it chooses for you?
Yeah, it chooses whatever the thing is hovering over.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
So that just tripped me up real bad, and I said, I guess you turn away,
yeah,
you're
going to
miss out on a choice, a critical choice. But yeah, there's a lot of...
I liked the concept. I would love to see more stuff like this. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I like the concept of an interactive movie. So yeah, for me, I thought it was amazing. And I'm literally like, when I go home later, I'm gonna watch it 4 more times, because I've heard there's 351 different ways to play it or watch it, and there's 5 different endings, and I've only seen 3. I mean 4. So I'm trying to find this last ending.
Oh yeah, there's a couple things that I have not.
This is better
yet.
Than a fork in the tail. You guys don't remember that, do you?
What are you referencing?
Oh, back in the day when CD-ROMs were first a thing, there was this whole wave of adventure games that they basically touted as interactive movies.
Like Riven?
No, Riven was actually more of a game than this. It was you know, this was the first time they could compress video and put it on one disc, you know, so they basically had these things where it's a bunch of dialogue, and then you choose which way it goes. It was basically this, except on the computer and of a much, much lower quality.
See, and that's why I don't like this. It's good, you see.
Let me just finish.
That's bullshit.
Let me just finish. A Fork in the Tail was one that starred Rob Schneider, and it was horrible. And it was universally considered to have been, if not the end of that genre in adventure gaming, but definitely the death knell of it. So that's it. Anyway, so that's, it's just funny to me that we're in this world where now this whole model has come back around, except in the streaming sense, when before it was CD-ROMs.
I think Netflix is going to do more like this. I actually feel like it is Mass Effect meets Truman Show. When somebody asked me, like, on Twitter what it was, that was my response. because
I mean, eventually all the choices are bad, though.
Yeah, no, eventually.
Eventually you reach a point where there are no good options.
Yeah, because honestly, at one point I was screaming at the television. I'm like, would you please, like, just let go of the bunny rabbit? And then I was cracking up because I'm like, oh my God, it's another rabbit.
Yep.
This is the thing. I think that Netflix may try it again, but the real test of it is going to be the second one. The first, I think a lot of people are going to check out this purely out of curiosity.
But it's not an episode, it's a movie.
Yeah, no, I know, but okay. I'm saying, and so they're going to check this out, and so the numbers for this are going to be great. And the question is, when it comes around again and it's no longer a novelty, will people embrace it?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like I got what I wanted out of it. I don't think I would keep rewatching it. I think I spent a lot of time on it this morning, and now I'm good. I would be curious to see how other people react to it. I didn't hate it. I just, you know, I wasn't so jazzed about it that I thought, man, I gotta sit down and poke through this whole thing again. I got whatever number of endings I got, and I said, eventually, someone's just going to post videos on YouTube, and I'll see the shit I missed.
But I also think that the allegory again, or the double meaning, as it were, because a lot of these, you know, Black Mirror is always got a theme that it kind of takes through a thread throughout, and that whole conversation about what Pac-Man means and what PAC means and things like that, I was like, oh my God, maybe this whole thing is about what we do. It's about advertising, or it's about how, because in the end, it wasn't so much about you controlling him, it was about Netflix controlling, giving you what you thought was control of him. Because in certain situations, you still, like you said, like, I tried to make him back off so many times, he still was gonna hurt somebody.
Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know. I find it fascinating, Adam. I really want you to watch it because I'm curious what you think.
All right. I'll give it a shot.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about sort of our favorite things of the whole year since the end of the year. But before we do that, a word from our sponsors.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, from Choose Your Own Adventure to, I was going to say News Your Own Adventure, but hey. we already did the news.
Well, I'm glad that was foiled for you.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I mean, I deserve to suffer. Anyway, so it's the end of the year. It's been the longest year, I think, in record.
It's true.
The longest year of my life, certainly. I had a full head of hair when the year started. Not so much now. A lot of other interesting things happened, but mostly I'm fixated on myself. But I guess we could talk about, I don't know, like favorite movies and TV shows and stuff. I mean, do your job, whatever. Hey, Adam.
Yes.
What was your, like, if you're going to say the movie that really sort of jumped at you, the one that you loved the most, or maybe the one that you wish got a little more love that you have a real passion for?
Sure. Well, we always keep coming back to the fact that it's crazy to think that Black Panther came out this year.
I thought that came out at the dawn of time.
It seems like it was an eternity ago.
After last night and the light in the sky, maybe it was.
I'm sure we're going to talk about that one more at length. So I'm going to say that I might have to go with Annihilation.
Interesting. Mr. Yeah. I don't like horror picks a horror movie.
Would you call that a horror film?
Abso-friggin-lutely.
Interesting. It was weird because I didn't walk out of it when I saw Ex Machina last year, I think it was, or 2 years ago, whenever that came out. I walked out of the theater. That was great. Oh my God, this is amazing. I walked out of Annihilation just feeling really unsettled. But if I can pick, if there's one movie that I thought about more after seeing it than Annihilation, I can't think of what it is. It really sticks with you. I mean, I'm a huge Alex Garland fan to begin with. I think he's done a lot of great work in movies, and I'm looking forward to what he does on TV. But there's so much. Visually, it's an astounding film, especially in the end sequence. It's not a huge spoiler because it's been out there, but there's this sequence where Natalie Portman and this, speaking of doppelgangers, doppelganger made of light and what looks like the liquid metal from Terminator, they do this sort of crazy interpretive dance. It's bananas, and I'm really glad they didn't shy away from that sort of trippy psychedelic ending, but everything leading up to that is amazing. And there's, you know, the scene with, I think there was a article recently about the scene with this bear that speaks with a human voice, that is so scary and freaky and weird. And it was in some article, I think, where they said it was one of the scariest scenes of the year, or the scariest scene of the year. So that was probably it for me. I mean, I have to watch it again at some point, but I just, again, in terms of a movie that I have thought about the most since I saw it, that's definitely it.
Okay, I'll have to watch that one.
Yeah. I mean, it might freak you out. There's some body horror in it.
Well, because I thought of it as a horror movie, I wasn't going to go watch it. Yeah. But I'm doing better with horror movies once they're spoiled for me, so I'm going to go watch it now.
Yeah.
Scary bear, body horror, okay.
Yeah. It's bleak. But
crazier than Ex Machina, though, with the body?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I love Ex Machina, and I think it's a brilliant film, and it's brilliantly acted. But in terms of crazy imagery and just out there concepts, Annihilation is beyond by leaps and bounds. So yeah, that was it for me. And you know, it wasn't a crowd pleaser. It didn't do well at the box office. You're not going to walk out of that feeling like, whoa, I'm so excited for this movie I saw. Like you might walk out of a Marvel film or something like that, or into the Spider-Verse, which is probably another one that I would have said, you know, I walked out super jazzed, and I did not walk out super jazzed of Annihilation, but it has stuck with me a lot.
Karima?
My favorite was Solo. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I'm absolutely kidding. I just said that to see you guys' reaction. We broke Adam.
Yeah.
Just checking his levels. So. You're good.
That was a good 1K tone, I think.
Thank you.
No, my favorite was Black Panther. And I've had a lot of people ask me, like, oh, well, even since you've seen Spider-Man, I'm like, yes. Yes. Black Panther also for seeing it and what it was socially, seeing people watch it 15, 16 times, seeing people get dressed up to watch it. I was at the premiere and I was seeing people who were, I'm considering stars and people who are like producers and important people jump up and down like little kids, you know, like that was the reaction. I hope to see a movie again that gives me the same feeling that I got when they first flew through the trees into Wakanda. Aquaman tried it, didn't do it. But it was not only a long time coming, it was just so beautifully executed and wonderfully done, but also at the same time, I fear for the sequel because I don't know whether or not we're going to get that same feeling again. Because it's like the feeling of the first time you see something that has not been shown before. But yeah, that is definitely for me for 2018, one of the most powerful things that I have. And I might say in 2019, and it's still the most powerful thing that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and the execution thing you said was spot on. There are so, we all wanted this movie to succeed because of the social implications, but there are so many pitfalls it could have fallen into and so many ways it could have gone wrong, and it went right in just about every single one of those ways, and that the finished product that you could point to it and say, this is a great movie in addition to being an important social film for the reasons behind it. You know, like, I think
that
was...
the costume design, the production design.
Yeah, everything.
Design.
I mean, the performances, the writing, the directing. The middle third of this movie is the best James Bond movie we've had in decades, you know?
And
so,
and even Killmonger rewriting his story was just so brilliantly done. And it's funny, I got a chance to ask J. Robert Cole, who was one of the co-writers, what was his decision on that. And he was very clear that every part of that script was a collaboration, like between him and the director, even the actors. That it was historical, it happened in 2018, and that is gonna be, that's my movie. What did it for me? How about you, Danny?
Oh, Hereditary.
Really?
No. Oh. I mean, in a way,
I missed the
memo. They were supposed to make a jokey
In a way, Hereditary is my movie of the year because there's no movie that I've talked about more. My Twitter handle is now Hereditary is bad because the whole end of the year, especially, has just been people talking about how it's the best thing they saw all year, and I hate it unabashedly. No, I'm gonna take Halloween. That's what I'm doing. I'm going for that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, horror genre is your wheelhouse.
So here's the thing. As you mentioned, there's a lot of movies that I feel like I could rep. There's a lot of movies that came out that were universally beloved. But Halloween kind of came and went.
Yeah.
A lot of people said, it was just okay. It was fine. Hereditary was better. This, that, the other was better. The original was better. Whatever. I actually think that Halloween is, of 2018, is the best slasher I've seen in maybe 20 years solid. I loved it. And I'll tell you why. I think that the exploration of Laurie Strode as an older person who has just not been able to get over this one incident, which instead of being part of this long storied weird history, their brother and sister, he's part of a cult, whatever, that it's just one isolated event. But it's so big, because it is. This person just comes in and kills everybody that she knows and cares about and almost kills her, that she never gets out of it, that she never gets over it, makes sense to me. There is this idea of them both still being alive in part because of that event. That's the reason why they persist, you know? Because I think we just assume, we think, oh, a bad thing happens and then you move on. Or a bad thing happens and it's so bad you die. Not... a bad thing happens, and it is, in a way, the thing that feeds your very existence, that defines you forever, and that's why you persist. Not just for Michael Myers, but for Laurie as well. And I just think that is such a cool story. I love that what kicks things back off again is podcasters who just, they want to find out the truth. Let's find out the real truth about this. And I love that, you know, they go and they try to egg Michael Myers on, And I think in a way, you know, they reap the friggin' whirlwind for doing
it. They poke the bear.
But then they also try and egg Lori on. And she only talks to them because it means that she can get some money that she can then give to her granddaughter, because that's sort of, you know, she'll never get over this thing, but she wants her granddaughter to live a good life. But she really says something in that moment when they try to talk to her. She says, everybody wants to understand. Poor Michael, that he went and killed all these people. What's the deep down truth? What is it that we don't understand that led him to this? But me, the actual person that went through it, has a child, can't deal with the child, loses that kid, is never able to really be a functional mother, and lives in as a recluse. I'm a basket case. I'm the one that doesn't get the sympathy. Nobody gives a shit. And I thought, this is like this is a great the mood 2018, if ever there was. And I
no,
just
no, it is. No, it's absolutely right.
I just love it, and I just don't think that the movie got the credit that it deserved. I rewatched it recently, and I just there's a moment in the original film. Lori knocks Michael Myers out the window, and then she looks out, and he's laying on the ground. Then she turns away, and when she turns back, he's gone. And in this movie, it's Michael that sends Lori out the window, and then he turns away because he hears something, and when he looks back, she's gone. And it's this turn right at the last moment of the film wherein he goes from being the hunter to the prey. And it's so satisfying to watch not just Lori, but then two generations of women, her daughter and her granddaughter, kind of really enact, I don't even think revenge quite covers it, a catharsis, sort of, but in a way that feels honest and earned. And it was so powerful to me, and I loved it. I just, Halloween 2018 was my movie of the year. I just think it's phenomenal. Anyway, right. That's it.
Yeah.
Do you have any TV that you liked, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm a year behind because I discovered Legion Season 1 in 2018, and that would probably be my favorite TV experience of the year. I blitzed through that, and I was just so in love with it. But I can't say that because that came out in 2017. So, and I still haven't watched Season 2, which came out in 2018. But, and this is going to make me sound like a bit of a homer, but I don't care. I think my favorite TV of the year was The Expanse. And I say that not as an employee of sci-fi. It is was a sci-fi TV show at the time.
That's an amazing show.
But I love these books, and I think that, I mean, it's just a shame. Well, I guess the show does well in the way that modern shows do well, which is streaming and stuff like that, but it didn't get the ratings on sci-fi, and that's why it's no longer here. But I thought it was great. Season two, you felt like they really upped the ante, and season three took it even farther. And there were some really just amazing moments. I mean, the effects and the way they shot everything was great. David Strathairn came on board, and he was amazing. The character dynamics, but all the actors, you know, and you think you're going to get that from David Strathairn because he's David Strathairn, but all the other actors really stepped up. Any scene that he was in with anybody, you know, really was elevated. And yeah, I just thought they did a great job, and it the stakes got higher. And my favorite, you know, they have this character, Anna Volodov, I think I'm saying her name right, who is, you know, the character. There was a lot of badass action in this show. And then her crowning moment in the series was a moment of compassion and humanity and communication in the midst of this horrible situation where everything's going down. And I was just like, man, we need more moments like this in science fiction entertainment. So I loved season three of The Expanse. I'm sad as I am that it's no longer at sci-fi. I'm really psyched that Amazon picked it up and we're going to get to see more of it because it deserves to be seen. And knowing where the story goes from here, I'm really, really excited. So yeah, for me, it was The Expanse. I mean, that, you know, I could have said the other honorable mention to The Good Place and my blitz through season one of Legion. There you go.
Karima.
I had a hard time with this one because I watched a lot so of much TV this year. Jesus. Yeah, and so many streaming. And on top of that, I watched a lot of anime as well. There was a lot of anime that I liked. It really came up to be a toss-up between Luke Cage Season 2 and Westworld. Because what Tandy Newton's character and a lot of these characters went through this season was absolutely phenomenal. But we don't have that much time. So I want to say that that is my honorable mention. And I'll say Luke Cage season two simply because, and I think, and I fully admit this. I fully admit the fact that a lot of it, some of it mirrored Black Panther, and I was still on that Black Panther high. But they figured out what they did, even though, you know, a bunch of these shows got pulled off of Netflix. Luke Cage season two managed to fix the problems that it had with season one. Season one, there were too many villains. There was a gross misuse of Mahershala Ali. I think he should have been all the way to the end. I thought he was. I did think that Mariah's character was evil, but I didn't feel. You felt for her, but you didn't see a lot of what she'd done. Luke Cage season two, that was fixed. You saw Mariah. You saw how she created her daughter and how, like, and I should just say had her, didn't have the ability to raise her because of what she had gone through. But then even when she realized what she had gone through, purposely tormented that girl. You saw Bushmaster. Say what you want about his accent, okay, for the Jamaicans that are listening. What that character brought to the show was what I felt what Killmonger brought to Black Panther. You saw him being, you saw him evil. He killed a lot of people. This is a very bloody season. It was a very violent season. And I'm not justifying what he did, but when you see what was done to his family and what Mariah's family was trying to do, had done to him, that story woven in made more sense. I also think that they figured out pacing. And I was fully invested in this season. And I felt that the only thing, it's funny, my only criticism of Luke Cage season two was the very end. I don't know whether or not the Godfather ending really did it justice. I was hoping to see what that turn was going to become. Of course, we're not going to know now because it's not on Netflix and we don't know what Disney's going to do. But for me, the reason why I'm going to, and even though, like I said, I watched a lot of TV this year, the reason why I'm going to say that's the show that did it for me is because it was one of the Netflix shows that I was actually really invested in. You know, we watch a lot of stuff here and we watch it for work. But that was one that I was like, you didn't have to pay me. I'm going to sit here and watch this. And I was, I felt Chiodari Coker really did the characters justice. So that's going to be mine.
Cool.
With a Westworld, this season of Westworld being the runner up on that. Cause it was really, really close.
Yeah. Danny.
I don't even know if I have an answer to this question because I watch too much TV.
It's so much TV.
It's too much TV.
It's too much.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm not even going to pick one show. I'm going to pick one episode of one show.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do. I mean, quick shout out. Gotham season five is about to start, and I loved Gotham season four.
I thought it was going
to
be all of Gotham
for
you.
So good. I mean, I love it, and I feel like that show never gets enough love. So I just like a quick shout to that, and I'm so excited. I've seen the first three episodes, and they're really great. We've got some cool content that's going to be coming out in the coming weeks about that. But if I've got to put it down to one thing, there's a show that I watched that was pretty good, starring Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph, called Forever.
Yeah,
but really?
But the best episode of the whole season was the one that they were not in. And it's an episode called Andre and Sarah. It is the most perfect distillation of a love deferred, of missing your shot. It made me feel so much. I was so destroyed by it. I found myself thinking about my wife and how we almost missed our shot. And how lucky I often feel. And watching it, I thought it could have not happened for us. It really couldn't have. And it's such a potent episode for a show that is sort of about the monotony of being with somebody long term and how agonizing that can sometimes feel, and how alone you can feel with another person, how trapped you can feel with the passage of time and getting older and all that stuff. To have in the midst of all of that, a reminder of what it means when you feel something so powerful for somebody and yet it just doesn't quite come together, and how lucky we are when it does. just a beautiful story. So yeah, I have to say, of all the things that I watched this year, that single episode really stands out to me. I think it's unforgettable. Unforgettable. There you go. I said the word correctly that time.
Great.
There you go. And that's a personal meaning, which is awesome.
Yeah. So there you go. So those are sort of our picks for the year.
Well, we should talk about, like, what are the big moments from this year? Stuff that was in the show or movie. I mean, it wasn't the movie, but the Snapchat was such a big thing.
Yeah, the Snapchat was a big thing.
Like, that resonated like a mother.
You know, what else was weird? Being at San Diego Comic-Con with you guys in the middle of it, hearing that James Gunn had been taken off of.
Wow, yeah, that whole thing.
Like, and we were in the middle of recording an episode. We were like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah, that was a mess.
James Gunn being pulled off of Guardians was weird. I mean, it was a mess, but I mean, just also how it happened. We were like in the center of geekdom when we all heard about it. We were in like geek mecca.
Yeah.
So that was I don't know. I think maybe it was weirdest for me because of that, the physical, like being there in the middle of all that. That was strange.
I mean, and I want to give one final tip of the cap to Stan Lee. This was the year we lost Stan Lee.
Obviously, yeah.
That came very late in the year, but that was such a monumental. I mean, it was a moment that was coming for a while, given his failing health and his advanced age, et cetera. But, you know. It was great to see the amount and outpouring of nostalgia and thanks for his contribution that came up around when he passed. So, yeah, this is the year we said goodbye to Stan.
It's really hard to pick biggest moment of the year because it's been, as we've mentioned, an overwhelming 2018.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess...
And I will say, I didn't want to interrupt you, but and on a positive note for us, you know, this was the year we went on the road to more cons than we've ever gone to.
That was really the only thing that I could come away with. I know, again, that it's sort of very particular to us, but...
Yeah, because I walked in thinking that that's how everything works.
That was, we'd never, I mean, truly...
Like, you guys don't always do this?
Yeah, no.
You're not always exhausted?
I remember doing a New York Comic Con, and it wasn't even that long ago when I think about it. Who was there? It was like you, me, Cher, Carol Pinchevsky, Sakers of the Time. I think that was it.
Yep.
It was a really small crew of people.
Five people.
And mostly, we all went out for a drink after the con was done. And at that point, it was just, we were so, in that way, unformed.
Right.
And to look at that, which I think was, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
I think. And now, Cher's got her own vertical, and we've got...
Well, Fangirls did a panel at San Diego.
Yeah. What an evolution from that point to here.
I did, too.
Here.
I got to host my very first panel at San Diego.
Right. There you go.
Yeah, you did Night Flyers, and then we did
big giant stage shows in New York, Emerald City, and C2E2.
And that's incredible. I mean, that really was, for me, I just think the absolute biggest thing to come out of 2018 is that all of us were just... going to these places and then interviewing every type of person in a live stage kind of a way, which really, I don't think any of us had quite had a ton of. I mean, you've got theatrical experience, Adam.
Yes, I do.
but it was very new for me, standing in front of a camera and delivering a script that I've written, that I'm used to doing. But knowing that something is going to stream to YouTube and knowing that there's going to be people and you're on a floor of a convention was very intimidating.
I got to talk to Chris Claremont, Common, and Ricky Whittle hugged me. I can die now.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of these moments, like, I get paid to do this. Like, those are some of those moments. I don't know, for me, not that I don't love you guys, but it's still a lot of fun to go to those events to meet fans, to talk to, like... I'm geeking out about the same thing you're geeking out about. Like, that's really, really good. And it's really fun when you meet people. Has this happened to either of you guys where you'll see people at one of the cons and go, oh my God, love that thing that you did?
Oh no, I never get that.
Nope.
No one cares.
Danny, I know you got that about your Doctor Who interview with Jodie Whittaker. I know you got that.
I did get that a little bit. Which was very strange, but great. And that's the other layer is that you don't expect people to acknowledge your work because it doesn't really happened for the most part.
Well, and for a lot of the time, we work in a void. You know, we're sitting here behind our desks at our computers, doing, you know, you put the words out there and you get some comments, but that you're interacting with, you know, that there are real people out there who are reading and listening and appreciating this stuff is very, very cool to experience firsthand in these events.
But Adam, for you, was there anybody that you sat on the stage with that was like, this is really cool?
Well, DMC was pretty awesome. I mean, that was...
Didn't you say he introduced himself or Run introduced himself or something?
No, it was DMC. We were talking backstage and you know, he asked me where I'm from and I told him where I'm from. We had a little conversation about Kentucky and all this stuff. And he's like, I'm from Queens. And I said, I know. I think I know more about your life than I really should. But yeah, so it was, that was, I don't get starstruck that often. I've been doing this a long, long, long time, but that was, he's a legend. And so that was really neat. Also got to hang out with a monkey in Chicago.
Oh yeah, I'll never forget that. That was behind a C2E2. Remember
that? The monkey and the kangaroo in the diaper.
Yeah. We made that happen. Because after we did that, then everybody wanted a piece of that monkey action.
That's true. When that kangaroo hopped across in front of our stage and we were live,
that was
actually an epic moment.
Yeah, that may have been the peak of my year/life is when when I hung out with the monkey. There's a great picture because apparently they said that the monkeys of that age, capuchin monkeys of that age, bond with men and males because they're trying to learn how to monkey, right? And they need to learn it, if it's a male monkey. So there's a shot of where I'm doing this gesture and the monkey is sitting on the arm of the chair. And I don't know, it was just the timing, but he is also doing practically the same gesture that I'm doing. And I'm like, oh, look at, he's learning from me how to monkey. So that was honestly,
that's
that may
so
have
cute.
Been the peak
think
of my whole year.
Do you did a good
year.
Job? You think you taught him how to monkey well?
I hope so. I mean, you know, that's about where my intellectual level resides. So... We're right on the same.
At long last, all your monkeying around.
Exactly. Yes.
Got him.
So anyway, that was probably the peak of my entire year was hanging out with that monkey.
Yeah. All right. That's totally fair. Okay. I feel like 2018.
Let's put it to bed.
All right.
Let's get this over with.
Good night, 2018. Go to sleep.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So thank you for listening to this podcast. You should subscribe to Who Won the Week if you haven't already and leave us a review. Everybody loves that. And check out all the other podcasts. Good grief. There's a lot of them now. There is Battlestar Galacticast. There is...
We have the Project Blue Book podcast, which is coming up.
That's coming out next year.
Yeah.
And Mike Avila's podcast is...
Behind the Panel.
Behind the Panel. Finally, Behind the Panel moves to a podcast format.
That's right.
There's going to be some really huge stuff that he's already done that you're going to start hearing very soon.
Yeah.
Talking a lot about Vertigo and Karen Berger and all that, the influence that that's had. And of course, there's Phantom Files and Strong Female Characters. So please check out all of those. And before we wrap up, where can the kids at home find you on the internet?
They can find me on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
They can find me on Twitter and Instagram mostly as The Blurred Girl, TheBlerdGurl.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Year. Thank you for winning our year, and we'll see you again next year.